Kobe. Yo,
I'm sick.
Damn, you straight dog?
That's why I ain't got no time for these games and stupid tricks. For these bitches on my dick. That's how dudes be getting sick. That's how dicks be getting tricks.
Hi, everyone, and thanks for tuning into the Hot Socks Podcast. I'm Jamie Waxman, and you can find me online at jamiewaxman.com. If you haven't already checked out my Monday posts of So Last Week, podcasts are usually on Fridays, but every Monday I post a new sex news you may have missed from the week before. So check that out at jamiewaxman.com. It's on my blog. But for now, let's get to the Hot Socks Podcast. This is a podcast where we interview folks in the sex industry who love to talk about sex, who love to write about sex, who love to have sex. And although I do like to say sometimes those who can do, those who can't teach. But that might only, doesn't really refer to me, only when I want it to. Regardless, today's show is going to take on some really serious topics. I'm interviewing a man named Darren James. You may have heard of Darren James. About 8 years ago, he shut down the porn industry for a month when he was diagnosed with HIV. He is a former American porn actor who tested positive on April 13th, 2004. Not only did Darren James test positive before he knew he was positive, he also infected three other porn stars, one who had only been in the industry for a matter of months. Not that that matters, of course. And he now has made a life for himself as an HIV counselor for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. This is going to be an interesting interview, and I'm very excited for it. So please welcome to the Hot Socks Podcast, Darren James. Your story is almost like unbelievable that it doesn't seem like it's true, but it happened to you. You started out in the military, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Do a lot of porn people come from the military?
Yeah. You know, it's put it like this. It's a very rare, but it's just that, you know, all the stuff we've done in the military, you think, you know, you get out right away, all of us want to be cops. Everybody would be a cop or some kind of official job. It's just that all the skills that we had, and we get out, no jobs available. Nobody wants to hire you. So you had to take the gravy bottom jobs. You know, I'm not knocking people to do those jobs, but we were qualified to do a lot of technical stuff and then get out. But just that the government training was so behind, you know, a lot of us are starving on the outside.
So where were you when you were in the military? Where were you stationed?
I can't remember. That was so long ago. I'm going in the Stone Age, you know. I was based out of Fort Wayne, Miami, California. So I was a Navy CB. So I trained with a lot of the Marines and the SEALs and you know, just special groups because we did construction. So we did a lot of training overseas. When we traveled, we went to Bermuda, passed through Cuba.
And how did you find yourself back in Los Angeles? Or in Los Angeles?
I just loved the weather. I didn't want to go back to Detroit. Because just, you know, I just stayed in, since I was based out of Los Angeles, I just ended up staying here. You know, for me, I thought I could find a job in law enforcement. And that's why I ended up coming back out to California.
So you wanted to be a cop?
Yeah.
And you said there just weren't many jobs.
Yeah, I actually got hired for Oxnard Police for a while. And I was working up there. And it wasn't a sworn position, but I was actually doing they had a position where you can do, you know, we were driving unmarked units, writing parking tickets and doing traffic enforcement. We were alleviating some of the work that officers didn't have to do back then in the early 80s, or the late 80s and early 90s. So I was in limbo stages of testing for LAPD. And then I finally got picked up after a couple of years of doing that job. And then I got caught in the budget cuts of LAPD, and they canned us all right when I got hired. I got fired.
So you find yourself now without a job. You're in L.A. And how do you stumble into porn?
a buddy of mine was he was doing mainstream acting. He was actually on a couple of TV shows, you know, not a regular actor, but not like a big actor. He was just doing stuff. And he thought, well, maybe I can just go down to the Valley and do some modeling, because I was working out at the time pretty good. And he said, hey, if you just want to get some extra cash, you can go in here and do this modeling gig and save your money and pay you through the academy. Because I was trying to get on with the sheriff's department then, and that's what a lot of guys are doing, just making extra cash to pay your way through the academy. So I thought, by taking a couple of photos, I thought, you know, with some chicks, you know, and just, hey, I can probably do that under the radar. That was the dumbest thing to do, because once you do that, you're pretty sure when they do your background, they're going to dig that stuff up.
And, well, especially now. Can't really hide much on the internet.
Oh, no. And what happened, one thing led to another. Just like in Boogie Nights, I went to an agency down in World Modeling in Van Nuys, and I met some gentlemen there, and I was one of the first few black guys that they hired in late 98 or early 98, because they were happening to be, that weekend I went to go to that modeling agency, they just happened to be looking for a new fresh talent, and I was one of the new black guys that walked in that weekend.
What does it take? I think a lot of people watch porn and think, I can do this. Beyond, and we're going to get into a lot. I know you have a lot of opinions. I have so many questions about the industry and condoms. Your story shut down the adult film industry for over a month and really started to make people look at things. And when guys see porn, they think, I can do this. This is easy. What made it so that people wanted to work with you? Was it that you were well endowed? Was it that you could last long? Was it that you could... What made you a desirable male porn star?
In the beginning, I was coming in as an old man compared to most guys coming
in. What's old?
To them, I was like, I'm 48 now, but I think I was in my late 30s or something like that when I came in. And to them, that was kind of old. Normally, they want an 18-year-old kid, and you know, they just feed him all kinds of crap, and he thinks he's invincible. But, you know, when I came in, I was established. I was a little settled. You know, I was kind of disgruntled about not being a cop. So I figured I could just take this with my attitude. And just whatever they're going to give it, you know, I'm just going to do the best I can. Whatever scene they gave me in the beginning was horrible, because they stuck me out there. I was a lost lamb. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to stand in front of the camera. Everybody's looking at you. And
I mean, how hard is it to keep it up, too, right? Do you have to use drugs?
Yeah, it was difficult, because you didn't know what to do. I don't know. You know, I don't know how graphic I can get.
You can get graphic. This is a podcast.
Okay, what it is like, you're going to stand there and know how to jack off. I was like, I ain't jacking off in front of these guys. Who the fuck are these guys? and normally the girl is not going to help you. She had an attitude because you're new, for one thing, because she normally want to work with Mr. Marcus, because, you know, Mr. Marcus is the lover, and I didn't even fit that bill. So it was kind of like either I came in with something, or, you know, you just see what you got. But what happened, it was the first scene I did, and then Mr. Marcus happened to show up that day, my idol.
I have to tell you, I love Mr. Marcus. He has been a dear friend of mine for years, but okay, go on.
That guy, it was like the pressure came on, and I'm like, wanted to melt. But he came in, he was late, of course, but that's his style. He's the only one that can get away with that. And the girl just fell in love with the guy. You know, she knows him, of course, and besides, I had... No wood. You couldn't even put a plant a tree under me. It wasn't going to work. The lights came on. I just disappeared like water and sugar. But what happened, I didn't know what to do. Nobody told me nothing. I just stuck me out there. I just had the physique at that time that was working. And what happened, it's something where we finally got something going, and I was able to last enough to get a half a position and a half. And you know, Mr. Marcus was just kind of laughing because it was hot. Nobody was in the mood. And the girl really got an attitude. And she didn't want to be there. But we managed to get through it. And next thing you know, at the end of the day, or end of the scene, the money shot, I had one of the biggest pop shots everybody's seen.
What made it such an incredibly memorable pop shot? It was just that you had a lot of cum.
I always had them. I could come like a horse. And that's what made it, well, whoa. Wait a minute. Then everybody's like, wait a minute. That was the thing, I think, that kind of helped me stick around. And then I was like, wow, that worked. But I didn't know that. what I had to manipulate to make that work later on. I just figured out, wow, this was unusual. So later on, I started doing scenes here and there. I wasn't getting a lot of work because in their eyes weren't reliable. Because, you know, once you do the first scene fucked up, pretty much you kind of launch your career from that point. But what happened, a lot of people just like my personality. I've just been able to just be reliable, be there on time. I can catch the bus, get there.
Well, you're a trained serviceman. You know time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And you also apparently shoot very large loads.
So the thing is like you can have a big cock, but you got to have something too. And at the end, a lot of guys didn't have no cum shots because they smoked too much weed and they just stand around. You know, you'd be hard all day.
Okay, but I do have to ask you: do you have a big penis as well?
Well, I've been told. But there's guys bigger than me. But I've been told because of my stature and my size, it looks bigger and long. And when you stand there and you kind of ripped up at the time, it looks. People figure, oh shit, this guy can make some money. We can make some money off this guy. So I have to learn how to manipulate that too. So I worked out even harder.
Well, that's true. If you get rid of a belly, your penis looks bigger.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. And a lot of girls called me because they did a lot of anal shots. I hated anal scenes with chicks. And it was kind of like, I hated doing anal, but they called me because I can actually lean back and give them the shot. You know, I was very dream.
So you were very long, you're saying?
Yeah.
And so you could...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I can lean back a shot and you shoot the camera. Like if I was your dream, I can close in when you're going up for the tight shot. I can pan out, I can move to the side, I can put my leg a certain way, and just keep that going because I know years down the road I learned how to look behind the camera to see what the visionary of the cameraman will see. So I see what he's seeing when he's shooting. So I know how to do everything, and that's why a lot of camera guys and editors like me. Not everybody don't like you, but there's a lot of guys that did like me because they say, well, this guy, he can work with us, and I stop it. And I get them their shot, and then I go to the money shot, and then maybe even more.
Wow. Well, you seem like a very nice guy. I've had very limited experience, but I've had experience working in pornography as a sex educator and a director. And I do know that one of the things that is really tough is being a male actor. Like, how much did you make on those first scenes?
Oh, you know, I was so happy just to get in there and get laid because it was like, I wasn't going to get laid on the outside too much. It's kind of like, well, I got laid today. And just hang around, go home, go to sleep, work out, wait for the next day, eat my tuna, and drink my protein drinks, wait for the next big load.
Is that the key to the big load? What's the key to the big load?
Mine was that I couldn't digest dairy products very well. So I think on top of me, I just normally had a big load. Even since I guess I used to jack off a lot when I was a kid. But I think taking the big load of ice cream, tuna, anything with protein, my God, it was like, unbelievable cum shots come out of me. And people say that was very abnormal. And it stuck for me. It didn't work for every guy. Because I should tell other guys my method, and it wouldn't work. It's just whatever Mother Nature gave them. And I just, whatever I got, I tried to manipulate it even more to make it work. So if you're standing there, sometimes women from other scenes would stop. They knew if I was coming. Come around the corner and watch. Watch me break off a load. and it was just interesting because I did a scene for a production. I forgot the company. And what happened, the camera guy's battery died right when I did the cum shot. And he knew it was going to be big. And he said, my God, I missed it. I said, hold on. Just give me a glass of milk and some ice cream. I sat there within 2 seconds. I piled that down. Broke out another cum shot that came out even bigger. And everybody seen that one.
So, wait, so you did two cum shots in one time, like in a matter of moments?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because you didn't let all of it go the first time, or because you can cum that quickly a second time?
I can do that a second time. Sometimes a third if I'm really fucking built up and horny. And normally it don't take much for that, you know, because it was like even when I was doing fuck scenes, I would go home after work and fuck. That was years later. Because that's when I learned how to find out what worked for me. And when I got around the veterans, they seen it. There's a couple of females, like Randy Storm back in the day. she trained me, you know, even on camera, man. She's in Jewel of Denial. And my God, they knew how to push my buttons.
So I was going to ask you, did pornography teach you a lot about your sexuality when you worked
here? Oh, yeah. My God. Jewel of Denial, Flora Tucci. Those women were all unbelievable. I worked with Flora Tucci before she even did porn. You know, she was an amazing girl, like off camera. Like, Jewel of Denial was a rock. You know, was an amazing performer. And Francesca Lay, it was like, these women were phenomenal. I was lucky and fortunate to work with them.
And you worked with them? You worked with them only on camera, or did you date them as well
on camera? On camera, I didn't date them, but on camera, and I had a chance to meet up with Flora Tucci at a party years ago. And she was phenomenal. And just friends at that time. I never dated none of them, but just when I fucked them on camera, they taught me a lot about myself. My God. And then when I worked with other people after them, I wanted to destroy other women I just remember these women that I worked with, and my God, they know how to push my buttons.
That's the thing about pornography that I try and remind people is that people who work in porn and continue to work in porn, they are sexual athletes, and they spend a lot of time training to be really good at what they do. And that, you know, it's interesting, going back one more second to the military thing, the first time I heard a porn performer use the term civilian, I thought to myself, oh my God, she must have a military career she got out of. How interesting, she was in the military, now she's a porn performer. Wow, what a great story, which is obviously your story. Where do you know where that term civilian came for porn stars or performers to use?
We brought it, the military. The guys, there was a few of us, like Mark Anthony, he used to be in the military. There's a couple of guys who used to be in the military that was in. And when we would talk like that, and I guess other people would hear us, because when we sat down, like Mark Anthony, Tiki Boy was the mega of the fucking machines. But, you know, when you hang around these guys, him, Jake Steve, you know, those guys back in the day, you know, they used to hear us talking, like, you know, they could tell we were military. And it was me.
So you used that term civilian before?
Yeah, because, you know, because we didn't really hang around people outside of our realm back then. Because it was back in the 90s, we were so busy trying to be stars or trying to be somebody and follow our buddies that made it, we didn't want to stay out. We stay in Jim South's office over there, world modeling, and wait like savages waiting for a bone to be thrown for us. Hey, that guy failed. Okay, run down there, go do the scene. But we stayed in his office just waiting, so we didn't hang around whatever normal people are. And we would just sit around and hang around porn people. So if they had a little gig in the back room, everybody's horny. There's a girl in there, she's pulling out her tits. Okay, let's go over there and suck her tits and play with her a little bit. Okay. Everybody's chasing the back. And, she, you know, it was just like that. We fucked each other. We stayed around each other. That's all we did.
Well, that's the other thing.
For the next scene.
I noticed, too, in my time in the porn industry, that really performers stick with performers. It's a very incestuous industry, both as for work and for play, because you really it's hard for a lot of people to understand what you go through in a day.
I said we got to turn it on and off, and sometimes it's hard to have a relationship. You got to do a scene, and you just had an argument, and you got a big relationship, you know, fight. And you're okay, you got to go over here and work with this big company in the beginning that you never worked for before. And you gotta give it balls to the wall. And if you fuck up, that might be your last, you know. And I had a lot of those days. But then after a while, I got good. I just got relaxed. I didn't try to have no girlfriend. I didn't want to because I just wanted to just worry about work. Because either I love working with Jewel of Denial. She was like the best.
How often did you work with her?
Wow, I lost count. She put me in a lot of her movies, you know, because she became a producer and director. And it was interesting because she actually married Stefano back in those days. And they were a couple, and he was my friend. He was a good friend of mine. And he put me with her a couple of times on a couple of their productions. And they treated me like gold. You know, they were really respectful. She knew what I liked all the time, her big old butt. God, they drove me crazy. But just the way she was a very sexual, beautiful woman, you know. thick Italian girl. My God.
I love that you still love her so much. I mean, that's a very wonderful, sweet thing. Well, let me ask you one other thing. You, as an African-American man in the industry, I've heard from some other male porn stars that there is a race thing going on there. There is still some.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's
it was bad. It was bad back then because there's a lot of girls. It didn't matter. Even guys, they love working with people of different color. But there's some producers that like to keep that line. And most of us are young kids when we came in. I can say young kids because this was new to us. It was like a toy, and we were getting paid to have sex. You know.
And even though you were like 36 or 37, so you weren't young, but it was like a whole new life.
Yeah, we were just. Exactly. We're just fresh because we were new people. We met. We thought we had really good friends. But there's a lot of producers that love to keep that line. Oh, we don't want you to do too much interracial, or, you know, or we don't want you to work with these black guys because they got no wood. It's kind of like you got guys with like you got guys with two digits trying to get hard. You know, the other guys with the big dicks. It takes a lot of blood to get it going. And a lot of them, there's more pressure on them. And, you know, and a lot of them. It's harder. It is harder for a lot of them because they hear the woman's hurting. They don't want to hurt the woman. But the thing is, when you got to hear all these elements and the girl's giving them a bad attitude because his cock's too big, he's going to weigh in all that, especially if he's new. But you get a lot of producers that go, all black guys got no wood. All black guys got disease. It's kind of like it's bullshit. It's a bunch of bullshit. And there's a lot of people of color. And white actresses and actors don't care about that shit. They just want to get their check and go home. You know what I mean? But it's just the way they want to keep it like that. They don't have to be like that.
So before April 13th, 2004, you say you were making a good living in porn, right?
Yeah. It took me several years to make that good living,
And what is a good living? Like, you're getting paid?
I was getting averaging... I'm going to IRS problems right now.
I'm just curious.
They got me. But they got me.
Like you.
Because I was.
Were you making six figures?
No. Nobody makes that. Don't never let nobody tell you that. None of us make that. If we were, we would have never. All of us would have walked out of there millionaires. It's just that you make good money on a steady basis, but the money's going to stop. You got to pay your taxes. That's one thing. And you make a good week, like an average. I was making, when I got on a contract, when I worked up, my fifth year, I was averaging about, I was kind of tired too. I was averaging about 800 a day, 6-7 days a week. I didn't take no days off. Sometimes I was working two days.
How many hours would you be on a set when you work?
I got it clocked down where I can actually knock out a scene for 2 hours, be done. Average scene would be about 4 hours. I can get it down for 2 hours, go to another scene, I try to double book. I had to kind of, like an athlete, I had to train myself like that. I was so fucking tired. Work out, do another scene that night, because when you work for TT Boy, you have to be on point. He worked the hell out of you. And he knew. He knew what guys were ready. You know, you sleep. You don't sleep, get ready to go. You know, this guy failed, Darren, you're ready to go. Or, you know, Mark Anthony was the guy to train me with that. Mark Anthony hired me. Working with TT, then TT hired me. And those guys were brutal. They trained me because then you worked in Europe. And the way they worked there, they just shoot. And the scenes, you become a better performer. You know, the average guy couldn't do it because sometimes you don't want to fuck. But you got to get the big up, get that check. And that's all you thought about is that money because I can go buy. I bought two cars and paid them off.
So was that your motivation when you needed erection motivation? What did you think about?
Oh, yeah. I just got horny. Me, I just got horny. I don't give a damn. Some days it was like, give me a couple minutes. I have to lay down. Okay, I'm ready. I see an ass or a thigh. That was my thing. A little ass cheek and a thigh.
It sounds like you like big butts. Maybe not anal, but you like big butts.
I like them nice. Man, I like them round, not jiggly and dropping to the floor. Just a little roundness in there, a little cheeky in there, a little tease, and you know, a little oil on it. My thing was the oil, and that's what people get mad because I spill oil all over the floor. But I love that because the tease to my vision. You know, you can tease me, visualize. If I can visualize it, and you tease me, I'll go fucking crazy. You know, and you know that was my thing when I shot as a director. a lot of people like my stuff because I had the girls crawl on their hands and knees with her butt up, hiked up in the air, arched up, and guys loved that. One time, what was the girl's name? We actually stuck a beer bottle in her butt cheeks, and she held it and walked around. And she had the most phenomenal ass ever. And she held that beer bottle, and we pulled it out and drank it.
That's dedication. So,
yes.
Do you, I mean, of course you remember what happened and the day that changed your life. Do you actually remember when you were filming that scene that changed your life?
You be honest with you. I just can't because there's so much that happened. I don't know if you had the part where I actually attempted suicide.
That did happen. You found out, you went to get tested, as all performers are supposed to do, or were supposed to do at the time. Still are, but unfortunately things have changed in the adult industry in the last year. But you had gotten tested and you were on your way to film. And you got a call saying that, how did they tell you that you were HIV positive?
Well, I can't remember everything exactly because a lot of that, I'll be honest with you, a lot of that is still a blur. I only know from stuff that the actual documents that I got.
Okay.
Not the documents that's online. Because what you got online is what's hearsay, what somebody told you. And for the first time you hear it from me, my memory lapses from a lot of stuff is from my memory is gone. They found me a couple of days later in a hotel. And I guess I was still alive, you know, and I shouldn't be saying that. I was still alive, but they put a stent in my heart and I just woke up in a hospital in San Diego and it just, I don't remember a thing. You know, I wasn't expecting to be alive, but I knew something was bad. The way they told me, it was more or less just, you know, I'm HIV positive. I remember that, but everything else.
And was it right after that that you tried to take your life?
Excuse me again?
Was it right after that when you found out that you tried to take your life?
Yeah, because I felt, you know, horrible that I was the cause of all this tragic end for everybody's career and their life and everything else. I wasn't worried about mine. It was just that I felt like shit, you know. All these women, you know, I just thought I was just doing my job because a lot of them weren't working, a lot of them at the time, and a lot of them that were working. And all I did was try to hire them and get them and put money in their pocket. That's all I was trying to do. And I just wanted everybody to be happy, and I was trying to do my thing. I was just on the contract. And all I wanted to do was make it so I could hire the people that wasn't working. All I wanted to do was do that. Hire the people that weren't working so we can do something on our own. And then I end up fucking everybody's life over, not knowing that I was just doing my job. And then I got to blame. A lot of these women were trying to get people to kill me. And they got people to threaten me. They got my family that never knew I was involved. And just fucked. I just fucked up everything. And if I would have had a gun, I would have stuck it in my mouth that night. You know, easy.
Well, what you're referring to, I mean, it's a hard thing to continue to live with, of course. I mean, at that time, I think that what you're doing with your life now is pretty incredible. But when you found out you were infected with HIV, that's the same time you found out that you had infected three other women?
Yeah.
And one of them had only been working for a few months. Like you said, it wasn't people who had been it doesn't matter who it was. The fact of the matter was now four of you were infected with a virus that stemmed from something you had contracted somewhere else.
Exactly. The thing is, they don't know where. They don't even know if I got it from Brazil because they think I could have got it before I left California.
Which brings me up, this policy has always bothered me about the testing once a month, because I would say what you're giving a perfect example of, you can get tested on day one and day two, you could go on a party across Mexico, the United States and Canada and screw everything and everyone you met. And you still have another 28 days before you need to be, not that that's what happened to you at all, but that you could now go in for 28 days, have as much crazy sex as you want without having to report it because your paper is still legitimate.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was the thing we were ignorant about, because we were just misinformed about the information, because that test is after the fact, we get it. It doesn't prevent anything, because there's a window period, 2 weeks to 6 months, that she can pop up. Maybe you might pop up negative now, but tomorrow you can be positive. You just don't know. It's just that from the time of your exposure. In a way, I was doing scenes like crazy. I was working all these days. I was overlapping scenes. I was doing what I was told. Nothing in between. And what they want to do is keep putting it on overseas, because the thing is, like, I'll go back to this. The reason why a lot of us went overseas, because it was less STDs that we were contracting overseas. It wasn't like we were getting them every day, but nobody really got burned up when they went overseas.
What were you getting in the States?
The States, the biggest thing is chlamydia. Chlamydia is like getting a cold. You get that all the time, you're taking antibiotics. It heightens your chances, open the door for everything else. And gonorrhea for a lot of other people. I hear complaints about girls are getting gonorrhea in the throat. A lot of that was going around big time. You know, and these girls getting exposures left and right with gonorrhea and chlamydia by the time they're 20, before they're 25. What's the chance of having kids down the road? You know what I mean? It's a lot of that, and they don't understand. They'll have the new people protesting against the comments, right? But they don't understand a lot of the girls have been in for a long time are ruined by a lot of this exposures when they get out. And a lot of them will tell you, it's just, they wouldn't mind if we had these condoms years ago, because it limits. Honestly, if you can't use a condom, don't do the business.
Well, sexually transmitted infections like herpes and HPV, unfortunately, can still be transmitted through condoms. But you're right, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, they're way more preventable when you're using a barrier. Did you ever get a chance to talk with the women that lives were directly impacted along with
yours? Jessica D. in the beginning, and I tried to really reach out to her.
To which one?
Yeah, she is Jessica D. Jessica D. She's the one from Czech Republic. And I knew her for several years, off and on. And I used to work with her a lot. But she, you know, a lot of them really didn't want to deal with me anymore after that. You know, they didn't want nothing to do with me. I don't blame them. I really didn't care. But after a while, I just had to move on with my life and worry about myself. That's what I had to learn to do. And I had to kind of pick up on what I'm doing now is trying to help the ones that are still working, that want to work. But try to protect even producers, the shooting, because these people got to understand they're screwing these women too off camera. They're fucking them too. But they don't understand that they're getting caught up, because some of the producers and guys that I know on the side were telling me they're getting tired of it. You know, they still catch stuff here and there. They just, nothing changed, you know. And most of these condom companies, I don't understand why they were fighting against the argument about condoms in porn. You know, you got a condom company that ain't even jumping on the bandwagon to do anything.
Well, it's interesting. Nina Hartley, who I adore, has talked about how to fetishize, eroticize condoms. You know, I think if we put them in porn, then more people, even if they say that this is porn and this is fantasy and they don't want to see it, a crown condom is a great condom on. It's not super obvious at all. And also giving children condoms to masturbate with. So A, it's easy for cleanup. This is a total Nina Hartley tip that I use all the time. And B, it also starts to eroticize the use of condoms as solo plays, so that you get that they are okay during partnered sex too. And I do want to talk a lot about what you're doing right now. I have one other question, because I know that when you found out, your parents did not know what you were doing in the industry. And how did that affect your relationship?
It's a really hard one, because they passed away right now.
Okay.
I don't want to put them out there like that, because this was helpful in my relationship with my family with them. And it was real. I hadn't had a chance to see them before they passed away because of all this, too. I just got the call when I was going to work one day. I got fired from jobs because of all this. People from the industry sent stuff to my jobs to get me fired. So it was just really difficult for me to kind of make the ends meet, to fly out to see them and end up passing away. So I've never seen them in the process of all this.
I'm sorry, that means
a lot of this crusade is just for them. And to keep they wanted me to fight. The last thing I remember is just that they wanted me to fight and just stand my ground for this, because at least not doing it for yourself, you're doing it for other people. And not just doing it for poor people, doing it for everybody, anybody with kind of chronic illness, the discrimination, the harassment, stand your ground. You don't have to take shit from nobody. You know what I mean? And if you believe something in your heart, you know, you're not going to save everybody, but you can try to help, you know, those who want it and those who need it, you know?
So I love your positive message here. You are now currently an HIV counselor at the AIDS Healthcare Foundation?
Yes. Yeah.
And how long have you been doing that job?
I've been doing that full-time now for a year, but I've been actually advocating and talking for it since 2007. Yeah, 2007 on my own. I was on my own at that time, and I travel all over doing that. And as a matter of fact, I've been at UCLA. I got called for USC right before you got me today. and they just got wind of it. And I do events here and there, so I'm open for all that stuff.
So what kind of events will you be doing? You'll be doing a speaking event on...
Well, right now, since you're a priority, so I made sure.
Thanks, Mr. James.
And I've done a TV show. I've done Dateline, and we're trying to work on a gig right now, another gig to go on TV. And then what else has got... You know, it's not like it's like whenever I get the call right now, because I do have a job, and my job, I love working in the street, because I'm in the public, I'm in the community with the homeless vets. So a lot of guys that I meet, and women that know who I am, I get more support from them, and they give me the courage to even keep doing what I'm doing. Because the people keep saying condoms, going to run it underground. People, the porn industry don't understand. They got to get with it. I'm talking to the people in the street that buy the stuff. They can care less. They want to see people protected, because it doesn't matter to them. If you don't have a good scene, they're not going to buy it anyway. You know, you can have good-looking performers and good fucking going on, and with condoms going on, they're still going to buy your stuff, you know?
So do you get to talk, like, because I definitely don't have the popular opinion. I do believe that condoms should be mandatory with an opt-out option when two people really have some time to sit down and discuss, look, this is the last time I had unprotected sex, and here's my last test. And, you know, I understand some people in the industry are saying, you know, back off my body, my choice. But that's exactly it. It should be your body and your choice. But when you're an 18-year-old girl coming into the industry who isn't going to work unless she agrees to do a scene the way she's told to do it without a condom, she has no power.
Exactly, and that's what a lot's going on, because right away they're doing anal straight off the bat. And then people don't understand that at high exposure, big exposure, because the producer, you look at it, how many producers and owners are doing his own scenes? Not one of them, really. You know, just like cigarette companies. See, the owner of the cigarette company, he ain't smoking them cigarettes. You got you and everybody else buying them. You know what I mean? You kind of look at that and go, hey, this guy ain't front. You know, on the company, he can be saving a lot of money doing his own scenes, right? But he ain't going to do it, because he knows something out there. The boogeyman's out there. And honestly, it's more than just HIV. There's so many other STDs.
There's so many.
And these young kids coming out there, and they throw it in everybody's head that it's no big deal. We got more chlamydia and gonorrhea. I'm in the public working, so I know. We got more chlamydia and gonorrhea and syphilis running crazy, HPV. Everything's out there now. And you got people that's doing the sex parties in the sex business after work, getting exposed too. So, you know, all that, you know, you got to do something. You know, every 10 to 15 years, we got some kind of new virus or something popping up somewhere. And all we're doing is trying to help prevent, not trying to stop nothing, just help prevent the spread. But people don't seem to get it. If you want to keep going out there and catching something, you just open the chances, you know.
And you're not saying anything about not doing porn if that's your choice. It's more just
about your choice. Believe me, I ain't knocking. I still help a lot of guys put movies together and ideas, but in a safe way. Train guys know how to use condoms. There is guys that know how to use condoms. But, you know what I mean? It's just that they don't want to pay them. You know, the industry's like that. They just don't want to pay. Because in Europe, they're still doing it. Europe is dominating the porn industry. They've still been using condoms. Why can't we do it?
Wait, so Europe's dominating the porn industry and using condoms?
Yeah, they've always been doing it for years. They got, even, I hate to say it, but they have some strong ass performers over there with big ass cocks. You know what I mean? They can put on a condom, no problem. These guys demand a lot of money, but you got to pay them because the dude can tear up a scene. You know, because when they come here to America, they take a lot of money from a lot of American guys.
Does the porn industry listen to you? Do you have people in there that are helping you help them see what you're trying?
No, nobody wants to hear that. You know, they want me to fade away. You know, I've been the thing about me. I've been a martial artist for years, so that's one thing I pulled back out of my old woodshed. I went back and just start training hardcore and just, you know, that philosophy. Just keep digging in, and I try to use that in my everyday life. You know, a lot of these porn people, I just try to take care of my health and keep talking. And show them, at least, you know, I'm not going to be dead. I'm not going to lay down and let them just kill me off. I'll keep talking until, you know, until somebody listens.
How has your life, aside from the obvious that you are no longer in the porn industry and it's taken you a long time to get back to where you are, and obviously you have found a calling that is yours, how does your life change living with HIV?
Oh, well, it took a lot of years to adjust, you know. I'll be honest with you, in the HIV community, I'm really shunned out a lot because of the porn. In the porn community, I'm shunned out because of HIV and what I've done. So I'm in the middle. I got nowhere to go. I'm making my own little life. So I figure I train with a lot of MMA fighter guys, and nobody really like us. You know what I mean? So I have to do what I do, and I got a lot of cool friends that are hardcore fighters on the street, or just cool guys that have my back. And one of the nicest guys that I met, I have to get out of this for a moment. I met a sledgehammer years ago, and I was one of the nicest gentlemen I met years ago, and I feel so sad what happened to him a couple of days ago.
Let's talk about this. Sledgehammer was an adult performer, and
I was trying to get him out years ago, but we lost contact. But, you know, he's been working out for years, and I got so much information on him about when I was trying to do my thing working out. This guy didn't see me walking down the street, you know what I mean, broke as hell. He would pull over in a day. I remember he'd give me a ride, and I was telling him, don't worry about it. This guy go out of his way ever since I've known him.
This guy, and do you think the porn
so
industry
much and worry about me. He was a nice guy. I guess what happened, I don't know the details, I just read that, I guess, altercation, him and the police, and they were tasing him, and he passed. But I don't know all the details, but I think they should really investigate that case, you know, open that up, because it's just, to me, Sledgehammer, we should not let that go like that. That guy was unbelievable, one of the nicest guys in the world. It's just that things happened, and I think the cops, I think, just stepped on the line too far, man. They got probably intimidated because of the size, but the guy was a hell of a guy. He's a nice guy.
Yeah, that was a really tragic story. And again, I mean, he was in his mid upper 30s. I had read something about maybe it was the fact that he was smoking weed. I don't know. I mean, if it was an altercation with the cops, I do think it's interesting though, because you wanted to be a police officer, and I find cop life fascinating because there's the power element plays such a role in police officers are and act, and not necessarily in such a good way. Well, I'll say not in a good way.
Yeah, well, a lot of my friends are cops. I can say that. A lot of my friends are working cops right now. And I know that area, I had a lot of problems with cops, certain cops in that area, even when I was driving around as a porn actor. I got pulled over left and right because I had a white female in my car.
Mm.
You know what I mean? For no reason. I was like, what the hell? He's like, what kind of work do you do? What kind of guy are you going to ask me what kind of work I do? So I told him, you know, so-and-so, and I told a couple of my police officer friends, hey, so-and-so, this guy stopped me over, and, you know, a lot of the cops that I talked to told me, yeah, you got to watch out, because it's just that area. You know, sometimes it's the area where you're at, too.
Interesting. It's interesting because we were talking about the whole thing about the interracial prejudice in porn, and it's in life. I mean, porn mimics life in some ways. Chlamydia and gonorrhea rates are, like you said, going up on the street just like they're up in porn, and or have always been maybe in the porn industry. I would be curious also to know what the statistics are around who uses Viagra in the industry versus...
Oh, it's like, to me, you got an 18-year-old kid, you got a producer. Now, everybody takes a little something or something, but when they abuse it to the point where you got to wake up to take a Viagra and go to sleep to take a Viagra, you need to get out and get another job being a streetcar conductor, because you shouldn't be doing the business. Because after a while, it can be hard as granite. But if you ain't got no cum shot and you ain't got no style to your scene, none can save you. Because honest to God, I thought after my failures from this industry, they can pull back. The business never pulled back. They never done anything since. It died out. It flatlined. Mm. It's kind of like, what happened? You know, I told a lot of guys, go back to the old style of shooting. Go back to what brought us up back in the late 90s. What got us started? Everybody's copying off each other, bootlegging each other's stuff. And then it just got crazy. You know, everybody wants to be a rapper. Stop all that shit. Just shoot fucking porn. Just give them what they want. Fantasy, good-looking girls and location, butt cheeks, titties. Show all that. Just go back to the tees. Get the people what they want. Don't shoot for yourself, you know?
Do you regret doing porn?
No. I don't regret. I learned a lot of things in there. It's a lot of things that are, you know, there's certain things that are, you know, that people I regret meeting. Mm. There's a man who's in there that I met, but, you know, I learned from that too. It's like anything else.
But I'm curious, why do you think people regret you? I mean, outside of the fact that, sure.
I just wasn't a likable guy. I wasn't an attractive guy as far as the facial, you know, and their look, I didn't fit the thug look. I didn't, you know, smoke the weed. To me, I don't want that to make a typical black man. I just want to make him just be a guy that wants to be a horny-ass guy that wants to fuck. That's it. Be hard, be fun. Bend over. That's fun. I would put Asian guys in my movie when I was a director. Nobody put an Asian guy in, like, to come in there and talk. I just say, hey, get this Asian guy. He's going to fuck my old lady. Get in there. You know, I put everybody, every ethnic background. I was director for a short stint. You know, I had a chance. T.T. gave me a job as a director in T.T. Boy Productions, and it was great, man. He was like the only one. And T.T. Boy, they could talk all they want about him. He did a lot for a lot of minorities. He invested a lot of us. You know, he hired a lot of minorities to shoot for him and work for him. T.T., he was like a real tough guy. I mean, he shot us. We learned from him. I had no regrets working for him because he taught me a lot, even about myself, because he gave me a chance to be a director. He hired me on contract. And when I did, when I shot my movies, I tried to do all my movies towards military people stationed when the war was going on. So all the girls can remember them. They talk about their websites and always remember the guys over there. Nobody else was doing that. I was doing that. But then a lot of people didn't like me on it. I had a lot of enemies on that too, you know.
When you have an opinion, I think, of whatever it is, popular or unpopular, you're always going to have friends and you're always going to have frenemies.
Yeah, because I put myself in those guys. Because when I was in the military, we watched a lot of porn. You know, a lot of guys watch a lot of porn because they ain't got nothing to do. You know, you sit with a beard, jacking off, and all you want to do is get home and save your buddy's life. Save your life and save your buddy's ass so you can get home. So you get on porn, you know what I mean? That was the thing to do. And then I was in Jacksonville, Florida, a couple months ago, and I'm walking from a gym. I was just there for a couple months. A bunch of military guys came out of nowhere, surrounded me. I'm taking pictures with them.
So people recognize you?
Oh, yeah. I was in Jacksonville, Florida, the most redneck town, one of the most redneck towns in the world. It was some nice guys up there, white, black, it didn't matter. They all knew who I was. They were shaking my hand, and they were just thanking me for just doing that.
It's interesting because I remember a time I was in New York with Mr. Marcus, actually, and we went out to dinner, the two of us, and we walked into a restaurant, and at every single table, there was somebody who gave him a knowing glance, and the restaurant was packed. Porn has a huge impact on people's lives, and that's why I think what you do of trying to get performers to understand this, the industry to accept this and hold itself to a higher standard is, and, you know, whether it unfortunately was born out of perhaps a tragedy at the time that is now, you know, not so much of a tragedy and more of a rebirth, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you would not be doing the work you're doing right now, Darren James, had it not been for the path that you were forced to cross.
Yeah, and it's going to take a lot of work, and, you know, it's going to take a lot more because we had a lot of kinks. Because all the years, it's just that it was just a matter of time this was going to happen. It could have happened worse. We could have had 20 people.
Now, since you, has there only been one other? There was Patience Zeta, right? That was years after you.
There was several, but I can't remember.
You're not the last person in the industry to have been infected, though.
I'm not the first. I'm not the last. They'll just keep blaming me. Like, I brought disease, but this industry had problems. You know, you can Google kind of some death-related. It'll say AIDS-related cases back in the day, but we don't know. We don't, you know what I mean? It's just that mine was so magnified because of what happened. And they needed somebody to blame. And they still need somebody to blame. You know, I'm gone all these years and they're still blaming me. Mm. You know, they'll blame me for anything. Now, I hate to say this. If I wasn't black, it wouldn't happen. I probably would have had a job still out there and people be my best friend, you know, but
so
I can't.
So you really think it's a color thing?
Oh, yeah. This industry has been racist for years and it always will be. I hate to say that, but it's still a lot of the
you're not the first black male performer to say that.
It's real bad. And you got a lot of black performers that's getting underpaid. There's high quality performers. They're getting underpaid and they can't make a mistake. There's more pressure on them to fuck up and they can't. And I feel so sorry for them because there's even more pressure now because after my demise, they still blame all black performers as no wood. I was on a shoot one day. I'll give you an example. I don't know who the girl was or who the guy was. It was a well-known girl and a well-known producer. I was staying at a buddy's house, you know, after my demise. I had no place to stay. He let me stay in the back part of his house. And in the bathroom, I just happened to be in there. I was going to work that night. And I guess they were shooting up front. So I was waiting for them to leave so I could get out because I didn't want nobody to see me. So I'm packing up my stuff, and I can hear them. I guess the talent had left. I don't know if the guys had problems that day, but what happened, I can hear the female using the N-word, and then I can hear the producer using the N-word like crazy. And I wanted to see who it was, but they would have heard me if I would open the door. So I just kept it open. I can just listen to them talk. And I just remembered that day and went, these are well-known people using the N-word like it ain't shit. You know, it's like, these are a bunch of black guys that just left. They were doing an interracial scene. What kind of shit is this? Mm. This is crazy.
And you never said anything to them that day?
No. No, I ended up moving out, you know. It wasn't nothing to do with the guy that owned the house, nothing like that. It was just that I was staying there. It was just the talent that was actually shooting there, and they were cleaning up. They were the only ones there.
Mm. But still, it's interesting. I was shooting not too long ago for a television series, and at a break, the man asked me what my background was, and his wife looked and said, "You can't tell from her nose that she's Jewish." And I relayed this story to lots of people because I have a very big heart and compassionate understanding for stupidity. And so I just smiled and said, "Well, yes, I am Jewish, and I guess I do have a big nose." And just the disbelief, though, of what people can actually say and still think is okay
is
amazing to me. And
that
doesn't change.
It's just their ignorance and fear, and that's the thing about them. They fear me, ignorant. So I just, you know, it put me back in the gym. You know, I try to throw up all that damn weight out of hate. I ain't going to lie to you right now. I threw up that weight out of hate and anger because of what was done to me. And also, the only thing that kept my body stronger and try to keep my mind stronger. Because I'm not going to let another one come up to me on the street and be negative like that without having a problem, you know. Because before, they kicked me down. They got me fired from jobs. I was, you know, all the hate that they put out there was on the internet. It was so bad. I lost jobs from it. And basically working, I even worked at the airport, Van Nuys Airport. I won't say the company that I work for, but a lot of celebrities fly through there. And at the time, years ago, I worked there 5 years, showed up every day, didn't even miss a day. This company couldn't wait to get rid of me because of all the negativity that they got from the porn industry about me.
Wow. So this was years after you were gone.
I was fueling planes, and some celebrities will recognize me and right, talk to me and say, wow, I didn't know you're here, and we just have small talk. But my supervisors at the job couldn't wait to get rid of me because they found out I was there.
Why do you think the industry wanted you to be so quiet?
They just, I don't know, fear, anger, just stupidity, you know? And I wasn't even doing nothing then. I was just trying to, like, defend myself so I can have a job, to have a career. But they just kept fucking with me. And he's like, you know what? Fuck them.
So where are you now? Yeah. Are you in a relationship? How is your health?
Well, I'm talk about all that. I have some good friends and I'm really protective. I've known them for 8 years. And they've been my backbone for years. A couple of female friends that I have. And they've been my support. And they're not, you know, HIV positive or anything like that. And I've been, a lot of people see me in the gyms. I go to a lot of the gyms right here. I still train. I'm always walking around.
And you're in good physical health? It sounds like you are.
I try to be. I'm just getting older. My back hurts. My knee hurts. I forget a little bit of things here and there. And I think that's becoming because of age. But other than that, a lady today, a couple of women I was testing. I was doing some HIV testing today down in Skid Row. I was actually testing down in Skid Row today. And there's a lot of women. We're doing a couple of programs for women down in downtown. And these are women that are like, you know, either been out of jail or just down in the luck. So we were out there testing. And a couple of them were telling me, wow, you look pretty good. And they thought I was in my 20s. I'm 48 years old. They all broke out laughing.
So what is it like for you when you have to tell someone they're HIV positive?
It's not easy. It's never easy doing that. But you just have to just be strong for you to, you know, make sure that whatever they need, that's what's important.
Well, I can imagine. Whatever they need. Mm-hmm. I can imagine, too, just the experience you had and knowing, being told over the phone and the way, you know, there are certain ways to be told versus...
Exactly. That's why I'm there for them. When we do them, it's in a confidential environment and nothing's broadcast. And we give them time to absorb that. I can't talk about it, but I actually did have a situation recently. And most of them just, you know, everybody deals with it different. You know, all we just provide that service that we're trained for is to get them help.
Well, I imagine you come from such, you know, a depth of experience between hitting your lowest low after you were, I assume that was your lowest low, trying to kill yourself would be pretty low. You know, hitting that and coming back and finding a way, like I said, to not only talk to and educate people about HIV, but to also just, I appreciate, and again, I've never been so absorbed and with the adult industry that I am to a lot of people an outsider, but I appreciate that someone like you has stuck around instead of just trying to say, forget about me and my problems. You've stuck around, and although, of course, there are things and people that, you know, may not have done things the way you'd like, you're still there to be a pillar of strength for what you believe in.
Yeah, it was a surgeon, the top surgeon. Matter of fact, the chief surgeon over at the hospital in San Diego, he came out. He never done this. He came to my hospital bed. I remember this. And he woke me up and he told me, "It's the reason why you're alive, man." He told me, "You got to be here. You're here for a reason." I remember when he told me that, and that's when I started just in that hospital bed. I was in there for a couple of weeks. I just better get my ass together and figure this out, what I need to do, because I'm too ugly to die, so I better figure something out, get off my ass. And it was a reason why he said I survived, because I was pretty bad shape. they found me. And it was just, for me to actually recover from that is a reason that I'm here. So maybe this is it, you know?
Ugly is a state of mind, and yes, there is a reason why you're here, Darren James. So if people want to get in touch with you, are you on Facebook or Twitter or any of those social media platforms?
I'm not even, man, I don't know all the computer stuff. I just have an email. That's about it.
Well, can people email you? I mean, I am sure there are people who would, and if not, I can, obviously I do know how to get in touch with you and can pass on anything that comes your way.
Yeah, I would rather do that because it's kind of, because still I get a lot of hate mail too, and I don't want to have my email.
No.
I'll cheer up on that one.
I think your heart and your mind feel like they are filled with love. And I really appreciate you taking the time today to talk with me about your experience in the industry and where you're going now. And, you know, what would you just, let's just talk for 1 second about the condoms in the porn industry. And you are, you know, on board for this.
To me, you know, for what all we tried to do over the years, it never really worked as far as, and I'm coming from the porn side. You know, a lot of these people that talk against it really never done hardcore scenes. I'm talking about hardcore scenes. And a lot of the exposures and exposures on top of exposures, you get so tired. You want to go home with a clean cock. That's all. A clean cock. Ain't no such thing as all these bodily fluids. Oh, it's just going to go away. We just get something and wait for it to get. A lot of the guys that I met, even till this day, they're just tired of it. You know, and what do you do? Got to have some kind of barrier, some kind of protection. You know, just having a piece of paper don't make it go away. You know, and people didn't realize it because the ones that talk against it don't do hardcore scenes. You know what I mean? You just got exposure. Now, you know who I'm talking about that's out there. And all it is not to slow it down. It's just trying to respect that when you get out because none of you guys are going to be millionaires from this stuff. Pay your taxes, save your money, and find a career because one day it will stop. And what you're going to do if you got something else coming out of that business. Yeah, and there's nothing to do to stop the business. That really would emphasize this. Nothing to do with stopping the business. And I made that clear. It's just a point of helping because these people getting out. There's going to be a lot of people getting out because their careers are changing. And they want to do something. They save their money and move on. It's just that your cock's fucked up. Your pussy's fucked up. What are you going to do? Your ass is fucked up. What are you going to do? And you got nothing to show for it because once you out, they're still making money off your movie. You got nothing when you walk from this.
Did you ever make royalties?
No, none of us. Nobody does. And don't let nobody ever tell you that. Somebody that owns the company and that's the real owner, the true owner, he's making the bank. And these guys are laughing and going to the bank. But then again, you want to protect them too. I say on their side, hey, you want to protect them so they can get a lawsuit. Because a lot of these kids can sue your ass now, you know, they catch up with something. So, hey, I think by having these condoms, it's going to put something on everybody's table. But in the long run, somebody's life is more valuable than worrying about their dollar. Because this, nobody walked from this being millionaires. None of us.
Darren James, thank you so much for doing the Hot Socks podcast. I feel grateful. And I just want to say, wow, thank you.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
You have a lot to say, and you need to say it. And I hope that especially with the condom stuff coming up, this is your time to use that voice again.
It was fun talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Hot Socks podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at JAMYE. Bye.
525,600 minutes. 525,000 moments so deep. 525,600 minutes.